All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. But today on the show, it's a special look back at 2021. We've been doing our end of the year coverage with our top 10 films of the year, top 10 first time watches of the year. And now we're doing something we haven't really done before. We're taking a look at our top 10 film scores of the year, which, as regular listeners of the show know, I am a film music composer, and so I thought it would be a fun thing to do here on the show. And joining me is another film composer, TJ Cross, a good friend of mine for many, many years, basically my entire life. And he actually joined me a couple years back on the Top Film Scores of the Decade special episode, and so we thought we'd jump back in and do one of these for the year 2021. We have a great conversation coming up, talk about a lot of great films, a lot of great film scores. Before we get to that, though, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together. Wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening right now, you click that subscribe button. Done. Finished. You get to hear all our new episodes as they come out, so that would be awesome if you did that. You could also rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, also on Podchaser and Good Pods, and wherever else you can hit a five-star button. Hit that five-star button, and we really appreciate that. Also, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show continues. So, with all that said, let's start talking about some film music from 2021. All right, my buddy TJ Cross is back with me to talk about some film scores. TJ, how's it going, man?
How's it going, buddy? Haven't seen you since the wedding.
I know, yeah, which was our first time seeing each other in quite a long time, but
like
it was great seeing
8 years.
You. Yeah, I think so. It sure seems like it. This is your first time on the show in a while, too, right? Was the top scores of the decade the last time I had you on?
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago, right?
At the turn of the decade. And I feel like we should have been doing this the whole time I've been doing this show, looking back at the top scores of the year prior. Maybe we'll do it going forward. But today we're going to talk about 2021. Lots of really interesting. I was about to say lots of great movies, but actually kind of not. I don't know. It was a weird year for movies. That's for sure.
Weird year for movies, and scores are continuing their trend of kind of, I feel like, fading in the background more and more. But I will say this. I think we've gotten over the phase of sound design and like they actually sound like scores again. Like they actually sound like film scores to me. Whereas I feel like there's a few years there where they were kind of more sound designy, if that makes sense, versus musical, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think some of my picks might lean into that sound design stuff, but then, yeah, you're right. There's a lot of like very, you know, really classic and musical scores that are also, you know, I think going to probably come up in this conversation. There's really just so many movies now between theatrical and streaming and everything that there's just, I think there's room for everything.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And actually, I'm really excited that we had this exercise because I actually found a few scores that I didn't know about, listened to the score, and then watched the movie. Nice. To see if it like fit in. So it was actually kind of an exciting time for me. I really found a few things that I think might shock you. I actually think my list is going to actually shock you.
Well, I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think in your head you're like, oh, I know the kind of scores this guy likes. I think he's gonna pick I think my top three will shock you.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm curious to see if we have any overlap, but I guess we'll see what happens as we get through this. So
yeah.
Let's start jumping in. We have a lot of movies, a lot of scores to talk about. What do you have for your number 10?
My number 10 is my grumpy, I had to put it there, but it was a fantastic match to the film, and it is Dune by Hans Zimmer. All I'll say about it is Zimmer's drummy drum drum kind of score, but it really did fit into the style of the movie, and I thought actually he did a really admirable job. That's number 10, Dune.
Awesome. Yeah. I don't have it in my top 10. It just narrowly missed it. It's probably an honorable mention for me. I do think it's like a little too big almost. And that's funny because like all of his scores recently are that. Like that's just kind of what you go to Hans Zimmer for lately. It's so freaking huge. But I mean, it's still a Hans Zimmer score, and they're so damn listenable, too, like, just on their own, aside, like, separate from the movie. It's just incredible stuff.
Real quick before you move on to your 10, did you find on Dune that same kind of like Zimmer sound mix thing where the music was louder than everything else happening on the screen, which is a really interesting choice they're making a lot with his music lately. Have you noticed that in a lot of his
films? Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that that's a director thing too. Like I know for sure Nolan does it on purpose. And I feel like Denis Villeneuve probably did it too. Like where they're just so in awe of what he comes up with that they just want to make it as loud as possible.
Forget what they're saying. Just listen to the score.
Yeah, that's a weird trend. Very strange. But my number 10 might surprise you actually a little bit because it's just such like a classically beautiful kind of film score. It's actually Nightmare Alley. Guillermo del Toro's newest film, composer is Nathan Johnson. Yep. And it's very piano driven mostly, but also, you know, obviously set in a carnival. It's got that kind of carnival influence. Also a lot of like creepy, like old school horror influence to it. Just really beautiful stuff. And the film itself, and this might come up multiple times through this conversation, films have gotten like super long lately. And the biggest problem with Nightmare Alley, I think, is its length. And I would say the score as well. It just keeps going and going and going. Yeah. But what's there is really, really beautiful stuff.
So I loved, just, I know this is not a film conversation, but I loved Nightmare Alley. I actually thought it was a really great film. I really enjoyed it. It made my honorable mention list, just so you know. It was my honorable mention for score. So slight overlap.
Hell yeah. Well, let's go to number 9. What do you got?
All right. So for number 9, I have The Green Knight. By heart. I thought, you know, this score, first of all, I'm a fan of the movie. And I thought this score fit so well. It kind of reminded me, and this is going to be a little bit weird, but Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, not as melodic, but it just had that like guttural, like violin sound. And there's a track on there called Rest Thy Bones, My Brave Little Knight. And I just love that track. It's like in my headphones, I'm going for walks all the time. So number 9, The Green Knight by heart.
I love this because my number 9 is also The Green Knight. and the track that I spotlighted on my list here is Rest in Bones, My Brave Little Knight. It is just such a weird and cool piece of music. Just all that otherworldly like vocalizing and it's just such cool stuff in there. I also wrote down I Promise You Will Not Come to Harm is kind of like the big memorable standout. I think that was even in the trailer. But yeah, it's a very, very cool score. And I don't know if you remember in our conversation about the best scores of the decade, I also had Daniel Hart's previous collaboration with David Lowery, A Ghost Story, which I really love this guy's work. And he's only done a few, but I'm really, really interested to see what he does in the years to come.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So let's jump right ahead. What do you got for number 8?
Number 8 by what I feel is the sort of, not the same style, but he's becoming the composer of the decade, Johnny Greenwood's The Power of Dog. I mean, that movie's awesome. And the score is just, I'm a sucker for that Western vibe, that Western earthy sound. Some of my favorite tracks are literally West and also 25 Years or even The Suite from that whole thing. I love that score. I think that score is a lot of fun. I think it fits the film perfect. Big fan. And obviously Johnny Greenwood is just like the new big composer on the block, I feel like.
Yeah, crazy. They had two amazing scores this year between that and Spencer. And I will talk a little more about The Power of the Dog later on in this. So, yeah.
All right. All right. What do you have?
So number 8, I've got The Lost Daughter. From Dickon Hincliffe, which I've never heard of this composer before, but directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal, a late entry on this list. It just came out at New Year's, actually, on December 31st it was released. But
I haven't seen it, haven't heard it.
It's very good. A very good movie. Not a super unique score, but it's just very like soulful and beautiful. It feels like a lot of like classic soulful music. The lead track, Letta, named after the main character, could just be like a classic soul song, just instrumental. And like a lot of these tracks are like set against what is essentially a very like kind of depressing and dark film, like mm-hmm. kind of playful in their soulfulness. And so they kind of like really juxtaposes that and just really elevates the film, I think, a lot. And there's a lot of standouts on here. I mentioned Letta, but there's a track called Octopus that's just really kind of plays with the whole thing just so much. And it gets a little more somber and more like in line with the actual story, with like a track like Pinecone or Unnatural Mother. But yeah, there's a lot to love on this score.
So tonally it's somber? You said tonally it's somber?
I would say the film is somber, but the mm-hmm. music really kind of plays with that quite a bit along mm-hmm. the way. So it makes for an interesting score overall. Another thing I really liked about it too is it all kind of feels like one evolving piece from the beginning to the end. And you know, you don't always get that a lot with film scores. Like sometimes they just kind of feel like a collection of pieces of music, but this yes. really all feels of one piece.
Nice. Nice. All right.
So what do you got for number seven?
So number seven is a movie that I forkin' love. Little Fish, Keegan DeWitt. I think it is kind of similar to what you just said. It's the perfect fit. Is it necessarily a score I'm listening to in my headset while I'm walking around? Probably not. But actually, it's not, because it's not my playlist. But for fitting the film, absolutely dead on. I wrote like a note called Vibe. It just reminds me of Life. I mean, it's so general, but that's just sure. the kind of score it is. And my favorite track on that is I Was So Sad the Day I Met You. I love that film. That scene in particular is just really powerful, and I think it does what a score should do. It uplifts the scene. So, Little Fish.
I'm really happy that you saw this movie. Not a lot of people saw it, and it's great. It's absolutely great, and it will come up on my list later on. So.
Nice. What do you got for number seven?
Number seven might have been higher on my list, but I wasn't sure. It's a sequel, and I wasn't sure just how much of it comes from previous entries in the series, so that's why I didn't put it higher up on my list, but I love this score so
Adam
much.
Adam's family?
No. Not exactly. It is The Matrix Resurrections. The score is from actually filmmaker Tom Tykwer mm-hmm. and Johnny Klimek. And this score, much like the movie, goes as insanely over the top mm-hmm. as can possibly be. I know we kind of had a conversation in mm-hmm. private. You aren't really a big Matrix fan, right?
No, I don't think it aged well. We got in a little text fight about it, remember?
Yes.
I will say this. I mean, how can you deny the first one? And I think universally everyone talks about 2 and 3 being meh. But
yeah.
I rewatched it and I just didn't I didn't feel it.
Did you watch the new one?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like the new one?
I need to watch it again because it's very meta.
And yeah, I feel it's like very meta.
I feel like I need to I really need to watch it again. I think even though I wasn't a fan, I was super excited. Right. So when I was seeing this movie, I was super excited. And sometimes you go in watching a film super excited, you kind of miss it in a way, you know, because you're just like, what are they going to do? What's the big twist? What's the big, that big ending that I already heard about before I saw it kind of got spoiled for me. So I was kind of like, okay, where's it going? What's the messaging here? Blah, blah, blah. But
sure.
I will say this real quick about that score. Very good. And Tommy Boy helped write Cloud Atlas, if you remember, from our decade. And it's literally my favorite score of the past decade. So I'm a huge fan. I think he's really talented, multi-talented guy. So I'm happy you put it on there. I don't deny that it's a good score.
Yeah, and the only other thing I wanted to mention about it is The original Matrix, great, just straight up electronic score, basically. Matrix 2 and 3 tried to blend that electronic score with more of like a old school action, almost spy music type thing that they were trying to do. And it was so bad.
I agree.
And I feel like here they finally hit the balance between big blockbuster action and that electronic. And yeah, I mean, I think Tom Tykwer is probably a big part of why it works so well this time
around. He's fantastic. I love him.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
So what do you got for number six?
This one might actually shock you. You might also be like, you saw this. It's Minari. And it's I actually don't know the Masari, I think.
Yeah, Emel Masari.
Is that how you say it? Yes, thank you. So not a person I know very well, to be frank, but it stood out to me when I saw the film. Like, it just jumped out to me, the score. And ethereal kind of music is not my thing. I am a classic, like, I want to hear all that melody, I want to be in your face, you know, 80s, 90s guy, kid. This is extremely ethereal, extremely sits in the back, but it just had this, like, this ethereal classical vibe. I don't know what it was about it, but I thought it fit the film so well and it really got to me. And so because it just got to me and I can't explain why, it's on my list as number six.
So you know what's funny about Minari? First of all, we didn't do one of these lists last year, but this was my number one score of last year.
But it's 2021 when it came out.
So yeah, and that's what I was going to say is that... especially since COVID, release dates have become so freaking weird. And especially when you factor in like end of year award type films that only get the limited release and then don't come out in wide release until the following year. So yeah, I had already seen this. It was like nominated for awards last year. And like, it's like release dates mean nothing now though. So it's like,
more importantly, this was number one for you last year.
This was my number one last year. I love this composer. He also did The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which was one of my favorite scores of the last decade. He's just absolutely fantastic.
So yeah, I mean, it's funny. Yeah, it's number six for me this year. But yeah, I'm glad you liked it because it really stood out to me.
So good. Absolutely great.
What do you got for number six?
My number six is Shiva Baby. Ariel Marx, directed by Emma Seligman, which is a really weird, funny little movie that takes place at a Jewish Shiva and is essentially a comedy, but is, because of the score, really, really made to feel like a horror movie, basically, because everything is so anxiety driven. And this score, with all its plucky strings and like big time horror influence, just really drives home that feeling of like, oh God, what is going to happen? Being around people is like the worst thing imaginable. And it's like really makes the movie stand out. It makes it so great. The track Anxiety Attack is like a perfect example of that. But then the score actually gets very pretty in places as well. The title track Shiva Baby also kind of like showcases that, just how nice this score can get when it wants to. But most of the time it keeps you completely on edge and is what like really sells the point the movie's trying to make.
This would be my number 11. It was an honorable mention for me.
Nice.
In a different mood day, it would have been number 10. Like, it just really was back and forth between that and Dune. So I'm glad you put it on your list. I love it.
Nice. Awesome. What do you got for number 5?
Now you got me thinking like, man, I hope this isn't a 2020 movie. Misha and the Wolves.
Okay.
Nick Foster. Why? I wrote why, the reason, because I could have done it. It was literally the first film score I've ever heard in a film where I was like, wow, that sounds like me. And I could have done that. And usually, this is going to be a reverse ego thing. Listen, usually when I listen to film scores, I go, I'm not good enough for that. I'm not good enough for that. And I rarely ever hear like a great score.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this guy wrote a great score. And I'm like, and also I could have done that. Like that, like totally my style. So anyway, Nick Foster, I'm a big fan anyway. My favorite track, just to call it out, is A Woman with a Secret, Evelyn and the Journey. I'm a huge fan of the score, and I'm an average fan of the film.
Okay. Well, this is actually the first one on the list that I haven't seen yet. So I'm going to have to seek this out and take a listen to the score as well. And don't sell yourself short, TJ, because I love your score. I hear things all the time where I'm like, TJ could have done that. So, you know.
Thanks, buddy. What do you got for number five?
Number five is a little movie called Pig. Starring Nicolas Cage, directed by Michael Sarnowski, and scored by Alexis Grapsis and Philip Klein, who I'm not really familiar with any of their other work, but it's just a fantastic Americana-type score. The film itself, like, kind of keeps you guessing about what's going to happen the whole time. They kind of sold it as this, like, revenge thing, yeah. But then it really becomes just a much more character-driven piece. And the score kind of plays with that same expectation to where you're not really quite sure where it's headed at any given point. And kind of goes between a lot of different styles, but keeping everything, you know, firmly in that Americana kind of feel. There's a track called Take Me to the City that's just one of the coolest pieces of music I've heard this year. Tell Me Who You Are, which is just super badass and like one of like Cage's like big scenes. And the score just keeps getting better as it goes on. There's just so much good stuff on here.
Also, Nick Cage for life. I love Nick Cage.
Absolutely.
I want him to get bigger and bigger movies again. I miss Nick. Yeah. So interesting about Pig is... And I did this post making my list, but I was curious to like see like what I was curious to see where I matched up with other top 10 lists. And that thing came on everybody's list.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Literally, like I went like to 30 different like, you know, film score rejects and screen rate, all these sites. Right. And like it was like on everybody's list. I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. But like I'm definitely in the wrong here because you and like everybody else like really raves about Pig. So awesome.
It's a very specific kind of a movie, and like, yeah, I do think that they maybe did themselves a little bit of a disservice by selling it as one thing when it's really another thing. But
yeah.
What it is, though, is a very unique and interesting thing. And, you know, Nicolas Cage getting a chance to do something that he could really sink his teeth into is just an awesome gift.
I love Cage. Yeah,
he's the best.
He is the best.
So four.
So four through one was actually a real struggle for me.
Yeah,
there's so many things I like about these top four scores, and I know we started this by saying like, you know, it was a weird year for movies, kind of a, so that obviously makes it a weird year for film scores, but I was actually pleasantly surprised that there was a lot of good film scores out there, a lot of good work out there. And so the top four was a struggle. And so for number four, a little Joaquin Phoenix film called C'Mon. I'm just kidding. You know I'm kidding.
Yes.
The Dessner brothers, Bryce Dessner and Aaron Dessner. I mean, my why was, have you seen this film? The score is this film. I feel like you'd have to be the worst composer in the world to do a bad score to this film.
Right.
Like,
it's so good.
It lends itself to being like, you have to have good music. Like, you how could you mess this up? And the film's amazing. I think the score is amazing. And I don't, like, literally the whole thing. And I think you said for a previous film, I forget what film you called out, but like, where the score was just like so consistent throughout. That's what I felt about this score. It was so consistent without becoming boring or repetitive. And so that is my number four.
Yeah, no, great pick. This was one I thought about going back to. I remember really liking it when I watched the film, but I did not actually get a chance to re-listen to this one and making my list. But I'm going to have to go back to it now after you brought it back up because I do remember it was really good.
Yeah. What about you?
All right, number four for me is a film called Oxygen. By a composer named Rob.
I don't know this.
It's directed by Alexandra Asia. It's a very big synth score. And you know, I love a good synth score. And this guy also composed Gretel and Hansel back in 2020, which is one of my favorite scores of 2020. And this one just as good. It's interesting. Normally, when you think of synth-based scores, you don't really think of memorable melodies. But this one has some really memorable stuff in it. The track "Open" is, I would say, probably the big standout. And that melody is one of the things that's kind of like dug itself into my brain throughout the year, you know, and I just constantly go back to that. But then built around all of that is just lots of really great, just show-offy synth stuff. And this is like a very kind of high-tech horror type of movie. It's one of these one location films where this woman is stuck inside this pod in the future in like a spaceship and her air is depleting. And basically the whole movie takes place in the pod. And so really it gives the composer just so much room to just go big and go heavy and just go all out with anything they could think of synth wise. And it's very reminiscent of a lot of classic sci-fi scores, but at the same time, plays with lots of crazy synthy stuff that makes it fun.
I haven't heard of this movie.
It's great. It was an early in the year movie. It was on Netflix. It was a Netflix original.
Check it out.
Yeah, it's good.
Nice. All right, awesome. We're getting to top three territory here.
Top three.
All right, so for number three, it's kind of a classic kind of score that I love. A lot of piano, a lot of strings, a lot of heart and emotion. It's 9 Days by Antonio Pinto. I mean, there's this one, well, there's actually two. Well, I mean, do you know the movie?
I haven't seen it. I've heard great things about it, though.
So there's a characters, Will and Emma. Anyway, there's two tracks, Will and Emma and then Emma. And that theme that kind of plays out throughout the film is just, I mean, it gets me. So yeah, 9 Days. It's beautiful. It really, if you haven't heard it, go out and listen to it. It's gorgeous.
I'm going to have to check that one out. Yeah, I remember hearing a lot of good things about the film, and I have not gotten a chance yet.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. You definitely need to go check it out, man. It's beautiful.
Awesome. Well, my number three is one we've talked about a little bit earlier. It's The Power of the Dog. Johnny Greenwood. Yep. Just a fantastic score. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, he is such an exciting composer. I mean, from his stuff with Paul Thomas Anderson to just everything else he's been doing, two scores, not with Paul Thomas Anderson, but yeah, so many great standouts on this. The Ravine I wrote down just kind of sounds like a Ennio Morricone score. Miss Nancy Arrives is another one I wanted to point out. It's just really playful and weird, and kind of this film is very, like, you know, as heavy as it can be, it's also kind of playful in that. And that score just really kind of pulls that out. And there's just so much like dissonance to what he does. And it's just, he does a lot of really cool stuff on here, all squarely within the Western vibe.
Yeah. I love that score. Like I said, I'm glad you put it on there. And he's like, he's the now, and I feel like the future. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what do you got for number two?
All right. So for number two and one kept flip-flopping, but I'm going to go with Mothering Sunday for number two by Morgan Kibbe. I mean, this is just another one of my kind of scores where it's just like all super emotional and deep. And yes, it's ethereal, but it's also a lot of melody in there. And first of all, have you seen Mothering Sunday?
So this is the first one that you've kind of stumped me on. I don't even know this movie. And I see Olivia Colman's in it, and I don't know this movie. Yeah. How did this go under my radar?
Well, my friend, finally. Yeah. There are, so I don't want to give anything away, actually, because knowing you, I know eventually you'll probably go out and see it. Sure. I don't want to give anything away. All I will say is there's a couple tracks on there that are on my walk around playlist when I want to get deep in my mood and cry in front of people, in front of Target. And it's Rising, Come to Millie, Maids on the Train, and Resonance. It's that score is just, oh God, man, it's beautiful.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the movie. Yeah.
Film is very good too, Dave. Really go see it. Seriously. It's a great film.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you got?
Number two. Again, one we've talked about, it is Little Fish, Keegan DeWitt. just absolutely fantastic score. I almost made this my number one, but I decided to keep it at number two. Just some of the things we talked about earlier. I mean, it's just so hauntingly beautiful. It kind of rides this line between, you know, the love story of it all, but with just how dark everything gets. And I actually wrote down that we talked about Emil Mosseri earlier with Minari. It reminds me a little bit of his work, especially his work in The Last Black Man in San Francisco. But yeah, it's just really, really cool score. And it really drives home just not only how sad the premise of the film, which is about this pandemic where people are losing their memory, just how sad that would be, but also how scary that would be. And just, imagine, you know, the melancholy, but with the horror and the romance and just all of that kind of meshed together so beautifully.
Yeah, I agree. Real quick, I want to talk about Little Fish real fast, because that movie obviously is super impactful, particularly given our past 2 years, right, in this world. And you know, just so many, it really hit the nail on the head. And I couldn't, like, that movie, like, how do I explain it? Like, that it panicked me, scared me. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I was like really like anxious. Yeah. That's like after that film finished, like, I was anxious. Like, that's, I just a side note, a little, like, that movie just really, like, I was uncomfortable. I remember like pacing.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
So, because losing your memory, like a memory thing.
After everything we've been through, it is, yeah, that hits hard. Absolutely hits hard.
So I'm going to throw a curveball at you.
Mm-hmm.
I have two number ones, but hear me out for a second.
Uh-oh.
The reason is because one's not a pure score, okay?
Okay.
One is a modern day opera. I think you know what it is, right?
Probably, but.
Take a guess. What do you think I'm going to say?
I was gonna say West Side Story.
No. Oh, no. That's because that's really like a 1958. Like, I don't consider that like a modern. No.
It's not modern day.
It's not a modern day. Yeah. Annette.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. So, Hear Me Out by Sparks. So, Annette, it's more like, there's just, it's, I don't know if I can call it a score. It was kind of a hard one for me because it's kind of like a musical opera slash, you know, there's all that singing going on and stuff. So I don't know, but I just thought it was out of this world. So
it's a wild,
epic, crazy, off your, like, just nutso kind of film. And also I love the music. So I just wanted to put that there. But the real score, number one, the real number score is The Reason I Jump. Do you know that film?
I do not. You're pulling some interesting ones out here.
It's about an autistic kid, but it the reason is because of that. So the score really is so simplistic and detailed in its execution that I was blown away with the fact that, by the way, I can't say this composer's name, Desai, I think it's DESAI. Mm-hmm. The score comes off super simple, and what I love about this composer is that the execution in the fact that it tried to create sound that of an autistic person would understand. And so there was so much detail and so much little things going on in the background that, frankly, if you're watching the film, you're not going to hear, mainly because of sound design. But if you actually listen to the score outside of that, you're hearing all these little other things that is supposed to enact a sense of what people who are autistic hear and see and feel versus what, like, someone who is not walking around the world just hears a simple melody, right? And so I thought that was really beautiful, and I thought the execution on that was amazing, and it's something I've never seen or heard before. It's a beautiful score in general anyway, but it's a lot more going on than you think, and just some favorite tracks are The Entire Thing, maybe The Prettiest of a Dandelion. The Reason I Jump is my number one score of last year.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I do remember it now that you're describing the film and everything. I remember hearing about this, and I did not get a chance to see it. I noticed two of the films on your list were documentaries, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So illegal?
No, absolutely. Okay. Legal. And 2021 is a year that I have slacked on my documentary watching. So okay. I missed quite a few of these, but that sounds like a great film though. And
the execution's amazing.
And just the way of trying to, like, do something completely unique and original with the score, which is, you know, a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. What do you got? I think I know now.
Number one, I this is kind of not really the kind of thing I would normally pick for like this high up on a list of mine, but this score just totally dug itself into me, man. And it is The Last Duel. I love this score so much. Harry Gregson Williams, directed by Ridley Scott. And this movie, you know, it didn't make my top 10 of the year. It's good. I like it quite a bit, but I didn't love it.
I just saw it.
It's a good movie. But this score just is everything I would want out of like an epic, over-the-top, dramatic type of a score. And I just think that Harry Gregson Williams just did the most perfect version of that, and everything about it just is memorable to me and beautiful and awesome. And it's like the one score that I just picture myself just listening to over and over again for like long periods of time. When I watched this movie, after you know, it finished and the credits rolled and everything, I sat there on the DVD menu just listening to this, like the DVD menu music over and over again. I just love this score so much.
It's in his wheelhouse for sure. Yeah.
It's so good. And the funny thing is, he actually scored both of Ridley Scott's 2021 movies, and I did not like his music for House of Gucci at all. So it just
kind of
shows.
He scored Gucci too? I didn't know that.
He did. It's mostly a soundtrack-based film, though. There's not that much score to it. It's very minimal. But the little bit that he did, I just was like, you know? And so when I saw this, I was like, well, there he is. You know, that's the good stuff right there.
Mr. Shrek himself.
Yep. But yeah, just fantastic stuff here. And lots of great picks between all of us. You had a few surprises in there for
me. Did we have any overlap?
We had more overlap than I expected, actually. Yeah. We had...
Little Fish, Power Dog.
We had two or three. But really good stuff here. Do you have any other honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there?
So Nightmare Alley was one of them. Like I said, pulling like a weird one because I thought Annette was really cool. And then I would actually say here's my, because I always have to have an animated film, but it was a horrible year for animated films and their scores. But I will say an honorable mention will go to Raya, James Newton Howard, old school.
Okay.
Just the very classic, typical, you know, melodic, heroic kind of sounding soundtrack. But like we said in the beginning, the pool was smaller because of the pandemic this year, I think, on what we were able to, like, you know, get out in 2021. Looking forward to this year, by the way, particularly for movies and film scores. But yep, that's it for me. Those are my two honorable mentions.
Yeah, I'll throw a couple extras in here. I'll just say, as far as animated movies are concerned, Luca had a nice score, I thought. That was a good one. But I'll throw in The French Dispatch. I loved his previous one. The Grand Budapest Hotel made my number one.
Grand Budapest Hotel is a fantastic score.
This isn't quite as good. It almost feels like B-sides to that, but it's still a lot of fun. Since you brought up Annette, I'll bring up one that kind of I left off my list, even though I really loved it, mainly because it's mostly song based, and that's why I left it off. But it's The Harder They Fall, the cowboy movie on Netflix. It's great. And Jay-Z produced the score. It's all like Western hip hop type music. It's so good. And then I'll also throw in there Clint Mansell, who, you know, I love, scored a film called In the Earth.
Oh, yeah. With the plants. Yes.
Yeah.
You know the story behind what he did, right? Because it's kind of crazy. Just hard
to
listen to.
Well, I know he works in a lot of really weird, like, frequencies. And it's a very experimental score.
He put microphones, like, in plants and stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. And and that's the thing. It was just kind of hard to listen to, but, like, brilliant for the film, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's always cool when somebody could actually, like, push things in a unique direction, because film scoring, it's film scoring.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? There's a pattern for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, that's my honorable mentions. I think we got a lot of good stuff in here.
Here I'll throw you another one. What do you think will be, this is completely like you're pulling it out of the air, but what film do you think this year hasn't come out yet, okay, is going to have an incredible score with it? Can you think of one?
Oh boy.
That has the potential of having an incredible score.
That's a really good question. I mean, one movie that I'm really excited about, and I have no idea what to expect about the score, and I'm not even sure who's scoring it, but Everything Everywhere All at Once, the new film from Daniels. They directed Swiss Army Man. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember that score, but it was all done with mouths. With voices.
Yeah,
it was so weird and so cool. So I know that they do interesting stuff when it comes to their scores. So I'm curious to see how that comes
together. That's going to play out. Yeah, that could be a good one for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Do you have one?
I just completely pulled the question out because I thought it'd be fun to pull a question out on you, but I haven't thought about any of it. No.
I appreciate it. I like that question. That was good.
All right. Maybe next year, huh?
Yeah. I hope that we do, TJ. And I thank you so much for doing the show again.
Yeah, of course.
And
thanks for having me.
Anything you want to plug or anything?
No. I want to plug you. Go listen to Dave's Piecing It Together. Yeah. And if Bird Road ever comes back, listen to Bird Road.
It should this week. We'll see
good,
what happens.
Good.
Hi, this is Wax Trax Records here on 2909 South Decatur. We buy all your old 45s, your old albums, any type of music memorabilia. Also, we sell music memorabilia, albums, CDs, and a lot. Come on down to Wax Trax, 2909 South Decatur, or give me a call at 702-362-4300. Thank you very much.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation with TJ Cross about some of our favorite film scores of 2021. Were there any big ones that we missed that we should have brought up here? Get in touch. Let us know what your favorite film scores of 2021 were. Get in touch on social media at PiecingPod on Twitter is where I'm the most active. Also in my Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And also, you could always just email me, get in touch. My email's in the show notes and on my website and all that stuff, piecingpod.com. So I love hearing from people, hearing what they think about the show and getting people to get involved in what we do here. Also, always looking for new guests, so get in touch about that as well. So if you do like what we do here on the show, we would really appreciate your 5-star rating. You could do that at Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, Podchaser, Good Pods. And while you're at it, hit the subscribe button. Make sure that you are subscribed for all our future episodes. We got a lot on the way. A lot of new 2022 movies. We might have one or two more looks back at 2021. I don't know, maybe. We'll see what happens. It's hard to say nowadays. I feel like ever since the pandemic, which obviously we're years into at this point, but I feel like I'm just kind of flying by the seat of my pants and planning for this podcast. But hey, we keep going. We've had at least one episode, if not two, a week for the past couple of years. So even if I don't know what's happening in the future, something's happening, that's for sure. So yeah, thanks everybody for listening. If you like the show, you could also share it, and we really appreciate when you do that. That helps get us in front of all new listeners, and that's what we want to do here. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And as a film music composer who composed music for two feature films in 2021, both of which are not out yet in any way that you can see them, they're in the festival circuit right now and seeking distribution and all that, but I figured I'd play some music from one of those films right now. And this is something I have not played on the show before. It's from a film called Inexistent, which I composed for a director named Benny Flames, and we had a screening here in Vegas earlier in 2021 that went really well, and it's been doing great out in the festivals, and hopefully you get to see it at some point. But I'm going to play for you towards the end of the film. There's a kind of like a flashback, and some of the main themes from throughout the film all kind of come back, and that's what this is. It's the Inexistent Suite, and it brings back a bunch of what's happened previously in the film, and so you get to hear a nice little cross-section of a lot of what's happening within the score in this one piece. So this is Inexistent Suite. I may release this entire score as an album in the future once the film comes out. We'll see what happens. If not, it'll definitely end up on the Patreon at some point. So one way or another, you're going to get to hear the whole score and see the whole film. So that is on the way. Hope you enjoy this. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.